This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. You're listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Pleasure to have you with us. For any of our new listeners, we're changing our scheduling a bit on this show in that during the first hour, we're going to devote this to simply one topic, and that is terrorism. We have a couple of very, very interesting and well-informed guests speaking on this subject. One happens to be a neighbor of mine, whose presentation I heard last week at a meeting that I attended, retired Lieutenant Colonel James McKinney from the Army. He's going to tell you briefly a little bit about himself. And then, of course, a man who needs no introduction, best-selling author and frequent guest on our show and good friend, Chris Martinson. Guys, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Welcome.
Jim, tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, real quick, if you would.
Sure, yeah. I retired 2013 from the U.S. Army as a foreign area officer and former intelligence officer. I worked in multiple embassies around the world. I was deputy chief of combating terrorism for U.S. Pacific Command's Joint Intelligence Operations Center. I worked in special operations missions as a director of intelligence down in a forward operating base for special operations. And experience in this in counterterrorism for about 25 years, as well as diplomacy and strategy development, and graduate of the University of Washington, Jackson School, master's program in international studies, and a significant amount of military and civilian education to support that.
So, Jim, let's get into our first topic here, and as Al mentioned, everything will have a focus on terrorism and the changing face of terrorism, but to start off, let's talk about how terrorism has impacted immigration. Immigration is on, I would say, everybody's mind around the world because of what we've been seeing in, let's say, Syria, just as one example. In your general opinion, how do you think immigration has maybe gotten a bad name? Why are people so afraid of immigration now, considering, you know, what the U.S. was founded on, letting immigrants in and growing the country?
Well, Corey, I think that definitely the United States is a nation of immigrants, and the overall philosophy in the United States has always been that as a more of a, and you probably have heard this before, a mixing bowl than separate groups. People come and have chose to come to the United States in order to support and be involved in the foundations, the principles of the United States and what they mean. They want to be a part of it. What's different in the recent past, certainly within the European community, is people have immigrated from these troubled areas in North Africa for a couple of reasons. One, to avoid conflict. When they immigrate into Europe, they don't actually become a part of the community. They've actually separated, and you can see that. We live very close to Vancouver, British Columbia, and these groups are separate. They have communities that are separate. They don't integrate into the system very effectively, and the same goes with Europe. And what happens specifically in Europe is these groups that have come over to assist and, you know, look for work or actually invited in on workers' visas. They maintain their identity, they maintain their culture, and they maintain their ideology. They're not basically integrating into the philosophical beliefs of Western ideologies. You know, the basic democratic values are individual rights, trump governmental rights, separation of church and state, and a capital system. So that is creating conflict. It's certainly creating conflict in the suburbs around Paris and significantly in Germany. And then, of course, we're seeing the results of these conflicts flaring up with small individual groups conducting very dramatic and unfortunate terrorist attacks, both in Europe and now almost regularly in the United States.
Chris, what are your comments on this?
Well, I certainly don't have as much experience in studying and working on this subject as Jim does. I'll tell you that my personal experience with this is my views are that terrorism is a noun. I don't believe that terrorists are born. They're made by circumstances usually. And there are a lot of root circumstances for why somebody would turn to violence. I absolutely agree, however, that there's only so rapidly that any culture can assimilate an influx of new people. So wherever those people are from, you know, the United States, if you just open up the history books, you'll discover that people had enormous difficulty with Chinese people coming into this country at one time, with Irish immigrants at one time, you name it. There's always been a growing pain around that. So I absolutely agree that there's a ideal rate of immigration that can be exceeded. And in Europe, it's been badly exceeded. I was sitting next to a woman at a very nice dinner who's married to somebody who's in a running for a very high position at the UN. She's a famous TV personality. She's from Belgrade. And she was in tears talking about the immigrant influx in her city. She said it went from a quiet, beautiful, very safe city, small, to one where she no longer felt safe walking up the streets because there were clusters of young men, typically with nothing to do, hanging out in the street corners, and she felt very unsafe. And these people were bringing their culture, their attitudes, and they had overwhelmed the local ability to deal with them in some cases, with towns of 2,000 people having up to 1,000 refugees somehow, you know, in their purview at that point in time. It's just too much. It's too fast. So definitely there's some issues here about immigration that really need to be dealt with. And my view is that whatever we've seen in terms of immigration numbers will only increase for a whole host of reasons, ranging from ecological in North Africa to economic all over the place, to you name it.
That's a very good point, Chris. One comment that I will make on that, though, you know, you were talking about the Chinese immigrants and on and on and on. The one difference that I see here, and I'm not really sure that it's necessarily being overblown, and Jim, I'd like a real quick comment on this, and that is, I think there is a real danger in immigrants perhaps coming from this particular demographic. Now, I don't want to imply at this point in time that you have to completely cut it off. But what I would imply at this point in time is that to be safe, you have to have effective background checks. I mean, I didn't ever see a Chinese individual walk into, you know, on a fairly routine basis carrying out very dangerous actions in the United States. Jim, can you comment on that real quick? You got about a minute left here.
Yeah, sure. So as a security assistance officer in a number of embassies, I was responsible for vetting people that came to the United States for training. I hear a lot of pundits talk about how, you know, questioning the effectiveness. Well, I'll tell you, you depend on the institutions within the government that you're bringing the immigrants from. And these dysfunctional governments in these places where we have conflict, there is no effective vetting. And regardless of what you hear and what people talk about, it is not possible to actually effectively vet, certainly if there's no standing government. So in the Syrian case, in most of the North African countries that are in turmoil right now, it's very problematic. Even in the best countries, it's difficult to go through that vetting process because you're depending on someone else's view and relationship. So it's tough. And I'll tell you, it's not possible to do in the numbers that we're talking about.
Well, we will leave that discussion with that final point you made there, Jim. And it's a very good point that talks about, even with the best of intentions, it can be next to impossible to properly vet everybody who enters their borders through any form of immigration. And that is, I think, the underlying issue that everybody will suffer with, is that immigration can very easily be a net positive for a country, but it's not going to be everybody that comes through your borders as a perfect, upstanding citizen. And unfortunately, the bad apples seem to garner the most attention in the news. It's a very tough topic, and I know it's a topic that is on everyone's mind, especially with the election. But just because I think we are all seeing some new and different people enter our certain countries.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention prescription antibiotic drug users. Have you or a loved one suffered an aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm after taking the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Avalox? These popular antibiotic drugs have been prescribed more than 80 million times since 2004, and medical studies show an increased risk of the following injuries: aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, and abdominal aortic aneurysm. If you or a loved one used the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Avalox and suffered from aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Will the government protect your family from Iran and North Korea's newest weapon, EMP? We buy guns to protect ourselves, home, health, and car insurance for accidents. Maybe you also have food storage. But how would you keep your refrigerator running in a long-term EMP blackout? Using tested military designs, the Solark EMP-hardened solar generator protects and powers your critical appliances for years without burying items underground or wrapping them in aluminum foil. Unlike other preps, Solark is used every day to help offset your electric bill automatically. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to learn how easily expandable the system is. Solark is the most affordable and powerful solution on the market. The whole system even fits in the back of a pickup or SUV and can install in less than an hour. See for yourself why Solark beats other off-grid systems at PortableSolarLLC.com. Don't wait for the government. Go to PortableSolarLLC.com to learn why Solark is energy insurance for your family.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare individual mandate. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including some alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing on with our conversation with Chris Martinson and Jim McKinney, Al and I want to switch up the topic for this segment talk about how travel is being impacted on a day-to-day basis and on a higher level. Chris, I want to get you in here first. Let's have a couple comments made by you on how your travel has been impacted, your take on travel now, all relating to how terrorism has impacted us.
I'd be happy to. Like everybody, my travel has been impacted enormously, and we have exceptionally long lines that necessitate having to arrive for a domestic flight about 2 hours ahead sometimes, maybe more, depending on the airport. Like anybody who's paying attention, I judge that the TSA has got a big job to do, and I don't think they're doing it very well. Every time I see a 90-year-old woman getting the complete pat-down, I raise my hand, and mentally at least, and think that we ought to be doing a better job of being selective about how we're screening and understanding where the threats really come from. And by the way, I don't personally worry about terrorism while I'm traveling. I think it's a very, very low frequency event. I worry a lot more about the car trip to the airport than what happens when I get there. And that's just me. I'm a pathologist by training. I love statistics and risks, and I analyze all the risks and understand the probabilities. And so terrorism does not influence how or where I go, but it does impact my travel trying to get there. And I think that's true for everybody. And, you know, I really wish that, you know, some of the incidents we've seen come out of the TSA are highly regrettable in terms of their attitude, how they're being trained, what they're looking for, the number of things that they miss when they're being tested, you know, by somebody in the security apparatus sneaking things through. It's all hat, no cattle. You know, it really feels like it's much more to create the appearance of safety than actually doing that job. That's how I perceive it.
I used to travel a lot, and I travel now with my wife very little, simply because, you know, I don't want to have to deal with that for a couple hours. I just bought tickets to go to Palm Springs in January, and then I go to Arizona in February. And I was told by our travel agent, you know, get ready for an hour and a half to 2 hour wait. So guess where we're going? We're going to go down to the government office down in Birch Bay Square and get the enhanced identification. They really have made a point. I think any time an American goes to the airport right now and they look at TSA, Jim, they're going to say, gee, I wonder who won 9/11 after all.
Well, I think your point is very good. And I think Chris's point is his risk analysis is really good, because the reality is most people on the planet don't have to worry about a terrorist act. There are some places that people have to every single day. But where we live, it's the probability of you being hurt in a terrorist attack is pretty darn little. But the cost and expenditure that we've to try to keep people comfortable, those are political decisions. Consolidating all the different aspects of our government to put into one Homeland Security and the cost for the TSA, those issues are really, really, really vastly outspending what our resources are to actually go out and fight terrorism, believe it or not. And when you take a look at that, you wonder what the cost benefit is here, because in fact, most of our citizens are pretty well fed up with it. It impacts our economy, it impacts our state of mind, and it impacts the overall just perceptions of what America is. At the same time, you do have the realities of potential problems. Now, I'm going to make one quick comment here and finish it up. The 19 men that got on board those aircraft, the 9/11, carried box cutters. The probability of them being able to do a similar, and I won't give any specific ways to go around that, but it's not that hard to do the same thing today. So after massive expenditures, billions and billions of dollars, a complete overhaul in the way we look at this, we really, from that particular event, is not a lot safer, except for those doors being locked to the cockpits of those aircraft. So, you know, people ought to think very hard about what their costs and what their political requirements are, what the impact is on them, and what we're willing to accept and balance.
Okay, Jim, I also want you to address something that Al brought up, which I find very interesting, and that is talking about going to the government office and getting enhanced identification, essentially making it, or it should make it, easier to go through security. I personally live in Canada and have what's called a Nexus card, which is great. You get almost a fast-track line through security. You're supposed to be a trusted traveler. But I also have friends who believe in the whole, I don't want even more of my information in the government's hands. But you know what? These guys are even starting to back off from that stance because they're tired of waiting in these lines at the border and at the airport. How, in your eyes, has these increased documentation either helped or hurt individuals?
There's a cost benefit to everything. So, you know, I have a Nexus card. I'm a global traveler, and I do have that access. It does make it very simple, and it feels a lot more comfortable. And I feel I've traveled most of my last, you know, 25, 20 years on diplomatic passports in different places. So it was pretty easy for me. But without it, and after retiring and taking my children, I was somewhat shocked at the impact and the difference in the way I traveled. But I'm used to it now. I think that there is a certain amount of belief that we are safer because of it. In general, people want to believe that. I think there's probably some truth to that. I am one of those people that thinks that the government and Google and Facebook, Zuckerberg, they don't need all my information. I don't want to be advertised to. That balance is a tough decision to make. If you're willing to provide it, you have to be willing to accept the consequences of it. And that's the unfortunate problem right now. You know, the communists wanted total control. If they had the capabilities we have today with data, they would have had it. You know, the problem becomes we believe and we want to trust in our government. And the unfortunate reality today is there are decisions that are being made in the U.S. government that make people concerned, and that concern is valid and relevant. Issues with the IRS and targeting specific conservative groups. What happened if it was in reverse? What would happen if the Republicans or if conservatives were targeting liberal groups? And that's the problem from a bigger, broader perspective. People have to have trust and faith in their government to provide that information. If they provide that information and it's safer and it's used properly, then they feel good about it. And right now, our institutions are really in question based on decisions that are being made specifically against this particular issue with terrorism and how we vet people and how we look at immigrants, how we look at overall changes around the planet, and of course our personal security concerns.
Well, Jim, I totally agree, and I'm thinking now of the camel's nose under the tent, and what I'm going to lead to here is that one of the things that's caused me personally to lose a lot of faith was civil asset forfeiture, which is the government coming in and saying, hey, we were fighting drugs. We thought that was bad enough. Now, for any reason at all, we can attach an asset of yours and charge it civilly, provide no information, no data, not even show you the charges we have. You have to fight it at your expense. That is a gross overreach. So I think it's legitimate for people to say, well, what's the next piece of overreach? And I want to limit my exposure to that without knowing what they're trying to limit their exposure to. It's unfortunate.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of the lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention prescription antibiotic drug users. Have you or a loved one suffered an aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm after taking the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Avalox? These popular antibiotic drugs have been prescribed more than 80 million times since 2004, and medical studies show an increased risk of the following injuries. Aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, and abdominal aortic aneurysm. If you or a loved one used the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Avalox and suffered from aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851.
Think about this. Your community's aging water infrastructure systems are very likely to be contaminated with heavy metals like lead, disinfection chemicals like ammonia, chlorine and chloramines, and pharmaceuticals like statins, pain meds, and antidepressants.
And no, water treatment plants are not equipped to filter these pharmaceutical toxins out.
Protect your family's water supply with the trusted Big Berkey water filter. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show Big Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria, and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market, the gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters for the love of clean water.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Alrighty, welcome back. Segment three of the first hour, a very, very interesting discussion between retired Lieutenant Colonel James McKinney and our friend Chris Martinson. I want to bring up one thing, Jim, that you mentioned at the number one discussion that you and I had, and number two at your presentation at the breakfast meeting where I attended, and that is, you know, you said it's really interesting, but the United States had a plan back in the early part of this century, around 2001, whatever, 2002, when terrorism was truly brought to the forefront. And our plan consisted of a very effective way to fight the plan, to fight the terrorism. Number one, you know, position yourself as being the strongest military in the world so people would listen to you. And that was, and if I'm not mistaken, make sure that everything that, you did was legal. And number two, Mike Hayden, by the way, General Mike Hayden wrote a book about that, entitled Playing to the Edge. Very good book. If any of you are concerned about legality, that's a book you ought to pick up. But the fact of the matter is, with the Obama administration, our expenses to maintain our position as the ultimate, or at least a very, very strong military power, those expenses, by their own admission, by the administration's admission, have been cut dramatically. You got any comments on that?
Well, you know, we have, whether people like it or not, we have global responsibilities. And we have a budget, a defense budget, that requires us to be present in many, many places in Europe and Asia and Africa, of course, and significantly in the Middle East. Those expenditures are very they're very important. When you equate them to what the State Department spends per person per capita, you can look at the numbers. It's kind of interesting. But a couple of years ago, I had an argument with my my ambassador because he complained about DOD having all the money. But the State Department got about $50 billion. The DOD had about $650 billion, and I think it was 2011 when I did the numbers. But I did the numbers on how many people were employed by the State Department, including foreign nationals and embassies, and how many people the Department of Defense supported. The State Department spent about $1.2 million per individual. The U.S. military spent about $275,000 per individual. But that didn't include, I mean, those are the overall numbers of budget. State Department does not own any tanks. They don't have aircraft carriers. They don't fly aircraft. Now, State Department just takes care of housing and embassies and gives some assistance money out there. So those things are very, very the amount of money that's spent for our security and global responsibilities is significant. Now, when you take and you actually look at what we spend in the terrorism budget, and then you look at what we call overseas contingency operations now, what was previously global war on terrorism, those overseas contingency operations are a small percentage of that overall military defense expenditure. And then, of course, we've reduced in Iraq, we've reduced in Afghanistan significantly, probably to our detriment to overall stability. And when you, I guess the biggest thing that is a significant indicator of where the administration went, in 2011, Leon Panetta was the Secretary of Defense. He specifically ordered nobody in the DOD staffs to plan for sequestration. And the reason why was he had experience on the Hill for a long time, and he just thought that's not possible. Not that he's not a decent man and wanted to do the right thing, but he just didn't think it was possible that we could go to sequestration. And in fact, what happened was, we went to sequestration, and there was absolutely no planning done for it, and we did it overnight. Well, our defense expenditures and our planning really looks about 20 to 25 years in advance. So what we're spending today to build the right type of aircraft, the right type of helicopters, how we're going to train and effectively plan for our troops over the future to be integrated into those systems takes a long time. And what's happened in this in the last 5 years, we have basically just really undermined, with resourcing and with planning, the ability to do that while we're in a constant fight with what's really a global terrorism problem. So, you know, big potential problems with how we resource and how we spend and how we look and how we strategize for the future. And I'll just follow it or, you know, finalize this comment with one statement. General Votel just went through his congressional testimony for approval to be the CENTCOM commander, the fight in the Middle East. And he basically just said, you know, he's very concerned. We don't have an overall ISIS strategy right now.
Hmm. Now, Jim, I will note that the defense budget's up probably by a factor of two since 9/11, maybe just a little higher than that. And that's what's on budget, black budget, we don't really know about, of course. And I'm a person who I just landed at JFK the other day, and while my cell phone reception dropped horribly between there and Manhattan, and my teeth were jarred loose by all the potholes we hit, it just really dawned on me that in a question of priorities, I understand absolutely looking through the lens you're looking at, and resources are always in short supply. Could we have more resources to fight what we'll call terrorism? But really, it could also be seen as a lot of individual conflicts all over the globe, a lot to manage. So we're in a position of responsibility. And yet at the same time, as a person who lives primarily in this country most of the time, I can't help but notice the D-minus grade that we give, the engineers give to our infrastructure here. So the question becomes really for me, when's the right time to sit down as a nation and say, look, we don't have enough resources to do everything. How should we apportion this out? And my observation is that every time somebody says we want to spend $1 billion on upgrading domestic infrastructure, there's a big catfight, and there should be. When it comes to expenditures, let's talk about it and let's really have a real honest discussion. But when it comes to somebody saying, hey, we need another few billion for Ukraine or to toss into, what we're calling moderate rebels in northern Syria or whatever that is, those get bipartisanly rubber stamped. So there seems to me, as a observer here in this country, there's still an asymmetry between how funds are apportioned. I, for one, would really like to have the conversation which says, what about our own country? And if we can't do everything, where do we draw that line? I haven't really been privy to the conversations you have. Are people really trying to balance those out at the higher levels? Because I got to tell you, from my perspective, I don't see the debate happening.
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I'll tell you, I am an incredibly fiscal conservative, and I believe that every dollar should be accounted for. And especially, I am not a high defense expenditure kind of guy. From my perspective, and of course have seen waste and seen other issues that go along that a lot of people read about. But I also have been on the inside of those meetings with the principals committees and on where budget and resourcing goes. And usually the bipartisan approvals, they're not rubber stamps. They're actually incredibly well staffed, and there has to be a pretty significant issue before someone provides the type of resources or, you know, big expenditures, say, for instance, to Colombia to help fight their drug problem. And over a long-term strategy, those things in some ways become effective. When you walk away from them, they become ineffective and they become very costly. I think Iraq is a perfect example of that, where in November of 2011, people did not even know, people in the theater, personal friends of mine, did not know that they would be departing in a matter of 3 or 4 weeks. So we withdrew to save a lot of money and resources based on these sequestration issues. And what we have now is a vacuum and then filled with, in fact, what is now somewhere between 80 to 120,000 ISIS, well-trained, well-resourced, very valiant in their own view and image, fighters that are going to be existing for a long time. Our army's only just under 500,000 right now, globally. So I agree with you. Expenditures, infrastructure, incredibly important. How much we spend dollars-wise, how much are you willing to sacrifice of those types of things in order to defend us? It's a tough question. The problem is our overall stability and having those arguments, and I agree with you completely, there needs to be a lot more dialogue with that.
Yes, there does. And I think there needs to be a lot more honesty being conveyed to the general public as to what is going on, because I know in my mind, and I know a lot of my friends have a lot of questions that give you that uneasy feeling because it doesn't feel like you get the straight answers, whether they have the straight answers or not. Stick around, we're going to be right back to wrap up the first hour, continuing with James McWinney and Chris Martin.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer, or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home, or business, or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
Introducing the fastest growing digital currency company in the world,
OneLight. With over 2.1 million members, OneCoin is becoming the most powerful force in digital currency. It reached over $1 billion in revenue in its first year. No other company has accomplished such an impressive feat. Now you can achieve financial independence with the strength of OneLight. Find out how to build your financial dreams. 877-933-4747. 877-933-4747. Dedicated to helping you create financial abundance.
As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision and independence to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. It's the leading cause of blindness in adults 55 and older. Some of us are at greater risk for AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD. If left untreated, it can lead to blindness. The good news? With early detection, AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that can reduce or even reverse some vision loss. Learning that you have AMD can be scary, but there's hope and help. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is researching and developing treatments and cures for AMD. To get your free AMD information packet, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. Join the fight against AMD, because together there is a cure in sight.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition and this extra long segment that we have been doing with Jim McKinney and Chris Martinson. Jim, I do want to quickly touch on what we were talking about at the tail end of last segment, and that was allocation of resources. Most people think of this in terms of monetary, which I completely understand, but there's also in terms of allies, other countries, other nations that are willing to stand by the U.S. and fight for, well, what we are essentially putting out to the world. Right now, I want to ask you, do we have those resources in terms of allies around the world that are willing to fight for us and take a leading stance to take down terrorism?
Well, interesting you should ask. I talked to my son this morning, who is right now at our Bob Mirim Air Base on his way down to Helmand Province, and he made friends with a Georgian soldier. They traded uniforms and patches. One of my first assignments as a foreign area officer, I was the chief of the Office of Defense Cooperation. I opened the Security Assistance Office in the Republic of Georgia. We basically began helping them recover from the destruction of the former Soviet Union and building their military up. They became one of the biggest contributors to security in Iraq. They were the third largest troop contributor when the Russians invaded in 2008 and had to pull their troops back, and the U.S. administration flew them back to try and help secure, and they managed to stave off challenges. They are now very seriously involved in Afghanistan. They've been in Iraq. They're with us around the world. The same thing with Albania. I was a security assistance officer there from 2004 to 2006. My goal was to integrate them into NATO. Some seemingly thought that was impossible, but by 2007 they were invited in. And those are important allies. Albania, predominantly Muslim nation, and an important member of the coalition, willing to go out there and do it. But there are some contradictions out there, and I'll be brief about this, but during the Arab, so-called Arab Spring, the United States policy and leadership made very strong appeals to the groups that were trying to overthrow those governments all across North Africa. And the unfortunate problem with that was we depend on those leaders in that region to be our allies. Their military, our facilities, our security. At the same time, we were supporting people that were actually trying to overthrow them. There was a contradiction. And unfortunately, one of my last jobs of retirement was an advisor to the Army Central Command commander. And I had to communicate with most of those guys. And they were wondering, hey, wait a second, you want to do this or you want to work together with us, but you're also trying to get my people to throw me out. So there are some problems with that. It is imperative that we have positive, good relationships with our allies, that we maintain stability, that those that cooperation and coalition warfare continues. Our security, our international security system depends on it, primarily through NATO, but other relationships. I think it's incredibly important that we have cogent and coherent policy, not inconsistent policy that is actually contradictory, in especially in the most volatile region in the world.
The thing that I find interesting in the United States particularly, and I'm not sure how this settles in other countries, but in the U.S. we have a huge divergence in opinions on this particular issue. Part of the population, typically conservatives, are stating that we have an issue here and we simply have to deal with it. We don't want any more bad situations where either Americans are going crazy and going after some of the minority groups, the Islamists, for example, as happened at one time down in Florida. We don't want that to happen, but we want to stay very secure. The other side of the aisle seems to be wanting to play this ball game according to different rules. I'm not saying that they don't necessarily want security, but I don't think they're willing to accept the steps that are necessary for that particular security. And my opinion right now, based on nothing more than recent historical events in our country and certainly in other countries, whether you're talking about what's going on in some of the Middle Eastern countries, some of the atrocities that are going on over there, or whether you're talking about what went on in some of the European countries, action needs to be taken here, in my opinion. An even-handed approach is certainly necessary, but effective action from a defensive standpoint, I think, really needs to be taken. Any comments on that?
And this kind of transitions a little bit into our risk problems. We have an important reality of 80 to 120,000 well-trained, well-resourced extremists inside ISIS. You know, and it's vague how many. We've got at least 30 different al-Qaeda-related affiliates in different countries around the globe that have self-proclaimed members of al-Qaeda, with maybe estimated between, and these are broad estimates, 10 and 30,000 people. They're not going away anytime soon. They are resourced by large finances with people in some areas, both industrialists as well as, in some cases, governments. They have capabilities in cyber. They have capabilities in social media. They have recruitment. They're not just uneducated people. As some estimates say, as many as 60% of al-Qaeda members have some college degrees, or at least college education at some level. They provide services to their communities. They give a purpose to people. Those are challenges that we have to address. We cannot ignore them, and they're growing. They are having a larger influence around the world. And yes, I think you're very right, Al, that in fact we can't just ignore or just think that they're going to go away, or that somehow we're going to just communicate and be friendly and negotiate with these types of individuals that are fundamentally against the basic principles that the United States was founded on. So, and you know, they're not the majority of the population of the world. By no means are they. But they are very well resourced. They're very capable, and they're going to exist for a long time. We have to take a hard look at that.
Jim, I completely agree that there's a lot of complexities there. I was talking with somebody from a SEAL team who was in a province in Afghanistan and got a really just a wonderful download on just how complex the situation was. And to simplify it, for me, I'm one of these people who believes that if somebody from a foreign country came over and bombed me and killed my family, they'd have a problem on their hands. every war that I've looked at in history, practically all of them, were resource-based in some way, shape, or form. And so what I've been observing from my standpoint, I've been watching the United States basically be using military force in a lot of situations. I've been watching China very carefully, been using a checkbook diplomacy, certainly across most of Africa and increasingly in the Middle East and elsewhere. And so there's always a couple of ways to get what you want, right? There's the stick and the honeypot. And one of the pieces that looks to me that really seems really clear in this is that what you're talking about is engaging with the actual complexities as they exist and understanding that there are different motivations that exist out there. How can we best align interests? Because people we're all people, wherever we come from, incentives are everything. So what are the incentives that exist for people to behave one way instead of another? And I'm a big believer that we've tried the gunboat diplomacy. It has its uses. The world is more complex now, specifically because of the resource issue, where we are with this story. And if we can be honest, if the Middle East didn't have oil, we'd have a very different interest and footprint over there, right? That story of resources is certainly playing up big in the South China Sea right now. We're starting to see a lot of these particular frictions begin to develop all over the place. And without what you describe as a coherent and a cogent policy that is equally applied, I think we run the risk of really not getting what we want out of this story. And I, for one, if I can be completely blunt, really have no interest in seeing a resource war fire up with China or anybody else at this stage. My son just turned 18. He just got his SS invitation in the mail yesterday, 3S's, Selective Service Administration, I guess is what we call it. So I really don't want him to be drafted for some, I believe sometimes there's a time for using force, but there are other times it's dumb. And if we get diplomatically cornered into fighting over resources, I think that would be a tragedy, because we can actually engineer a very different outcome if we want to. So I would want to understand that we really have a diplomatic approach that's equally in place with a military approach. And that's just, again, from out here in the chief seats, not being fully engaged in it. But it certainly feels to me like we're being outmaneuvered by China in some respects, at least with respect to winning hearts and minds, because they're paying for what they want.
Chris, thank you so much. We have to take a break for the top of the hour news. I want to say I think that is an excellent, excellent note to end this discussion on. You know, there is really no difference between this situation and the financial situations which we talk about constantly on the majority of our program. And that is the advice that we give is stay nimble, quick to act. And number two, stay very well informed. Lieutenant Colonel McKinney, we appreciate your time. Anybody has any questions, go to our blog. We'll help you out.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
Warning. If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-954-9674. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now, 1-800-954-9674. That's 1-800-954-9674. 1-800-954-9674.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at FullyCookedBacon.com. FullyCookedBacon.com.